Our speaker today is Chuck Beckman, Executive Director of Strings of Mercy, a 501c3 organization dedicated to providing and promoting therapeutic music and health care at hospitals, hospice, and health care facilities. Chuck is also Strings of Mercy founder, blog author, and CMP, which stands for Certified Music Practitioner. As Executive Director, Chuck works to raise awareness and support for live therapeutic music and is also dedicated to helping other CMPs develop funded opportunities to provide live therapeutic music. As a CMP, Chuck plays live therapeutic music for hospitals, hospice, and memory care patients in Forsyth County in the greater Atlanta area. He works specifically to help reduce symptoms of pain, anxiety, agitation, and the effects of terminal agitation at the end of life. Chuck was born and raised in Evansville, Indiana. First learned to play music in the fifth grade, starting with the French horn, which he didn't bring today. And Chuck preferred playing by ear instead of reading music and was asked to drop out of band just a year later. He picked up his older brother's guitar and a stack of records the day he quit band in 1968 and fell in love with the guitar that he mastered and learned to play seven different tunings. I didn't know there were seven different tunings, but anyway, maybe 40. Collaborating and performing with contemporary Christian music artist Michael Card for nearly 6 years, who did a concert here at Divine, a year or two ago. He received a BA in public relations and a minor in business from Western Kentucky University. Is that Bowling Green?
Bowling Green.
Yeah, yep,
or
know that. Yep.
The way we used to term it, Bowling Green.
Bowling Green. Stopped there many times on my way to Goshen from Atlanta. Not at the university, but in Bowling Green. And went on to become a construction industry executive. Chuck left the construction industry to become a CMP in early 2013. He resides in Cumming with his wife, 35 years, Sherry, and they have two sons, Mason and Chase. Chuck also enjoys fishing a lot, cycling, and expanding his knowledge of our country's rich history. As he mentioned, he lives in the Brighton View neighborhood. And please welcome Chuck Beckman. Dave.
Thank you, Hines. Thank you, guys, for coming out this morning. It's an honor, a privilege to get to share with you. I've really enjoyed sitting around the tables, listening to everyone's story. And, you know, as I listen to the guys speaking, I hear the passion about what they do and in some cases did. And that's a little bit about what I want to talk about this morning is, basically our passions, our calling. Before I get into all that, I will tell you that I shared with some of the guys at our table, my mom and dad met during World War II, where they both worked at a Republic Aviation factory building P-47 Thunderbolts. And that's where they spent the war. And post-war, growing up, my dad's and our conversations around the house when we had them, and they weren't often, was, son, get a good job, make lots of money, live the American dream, you know. And so most of the conversations that I had with my dad, and I love him dearly, were about how big the house was, how much money the guy made, what kind of car he drove. And that imprinted on me that life is about living the American dream, right? And so I really didn't have, I mean, I had passions when I was a kid, but I can't talk about most of those. but, you know, I was set on this course, make a lot of money, and in the back of my mind was, I want to make my dad proud. And so I learned at an early age that I could get a little bit of attention by playing music. And my dad loved to tell stories about his son who was in Nashville and got to rub shoulders with some pretty some people that you all would know. And my dad had a way of embellishing the facts. And so, you know, I'd come home and say, hey, I hear you're touring with Earl Scruggs. Well, no, That's not really what's going on, but yes, I do know Mr. Scruggs, and I've gotten to play a few gigs with his son, Randy, and da-da-da-da. At any rate. So I go through all that to say I started my career really not having a passion. I just knew I needed to make a lot of money. And so the Lord was good to us, my wife and I. We moved to Nashville soon after we were married, and I thought, well, with a friend of mine, we had a chance for a recording contract. He got the contract, and if I was going to participate at all, it was going to be as a rhythm guitar player singing background vocals and being gone 200 nights a year, and that's not why I married my best friend. You know, so that just didn't appeal to me as much as I love music. But I got into construction management and was able to do some things that got me noticed a little bit, and ended up coming to Atlanta to oversee business development, sales, and marketing for a construction company. And not too long after that, I was able to come on as a principal in the firm. And so, you know, I'm thinking like, I got it, right? I got it. And I was preparing my slice of heaven, if you will. We bought some property up on Lake Lanier, and I had visions of me running my sales meetings from the boat dock with my bass boat directly underneath, and I was going to live the good life. And then 9/11 hit. And prior to 9/11, we were negotiating everything. People were, developers and architectural firms and contractors were calling and saying, look, we've got this project. Can you help us value engineer it? You know, we've got to save X amount of dollars. And when we were invited to help value engineer a project, we were going to get a contract. So on September 9th, we were heading that direction, and we'd become so busy that we actually decided to build a manufacturing facility that was going to manufacture a lot of the materials we were using in our work. And so then 9/11 hit, and the phone didn't ring. It didn't ring for 2 days. I mean, nothing. And we had an SBA loan that was due to close on September the 12th. And on the night of 9/11, we met at the Marriott. And guys, if we pull the plug, we've just lit a match to hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I can remember sitting there going, well, by golly, if I'm going down, I'm going down swinging. And then 10 months later, I'm going, oh, I didn't want to pull the plug. So that was a rough patch to get through, but we didn't lose the house. I just really believe that God's blessing was on us, for somehow we were able to come up with all the collateral and everything without putting the house on the line. So we, 3 years later is when it really hit us, 2003. But over the years, we rebounded, and by 2006, we were cranking again, and this time had no interest in manufacturing materials, but we were working all over the Southeast, had an office in Palm Beach, Florida, and looking to open an office in Vegas and Dallas, and, you know, we're just going, ching, let's put the company up for sale, you know, we'll all cash out and live that American dream, right? And then when I was in Florida, I started noticing that, you know, you go around Naples and you see these little two-bedroom homes, block homes, with a half-circle drive, and they've got a lanai and a pool in the back, and they're on a canal. These houses were built in the 1950s, and I'm seeing them going for over $1 million. And I'm going, there's no way this economy can sustain this. Yeah, sure enough, within a year, three of the developers that we were working with filed for bankruptcy, and one of them one of them saw it coming, and they knew we had cash, so they used our cash to finish their project. And by 2010, we were wiped out. So I share all that because even though I was very blessed and really by outward appearances, we'd done everything right, just bad fortune, right? There was still an emptiness inside of me that, you know, I didn't want to be doing what I was doing when I was 70 years old. You know, it was just a means to an end. I want to get to a place where I can kick back and enjoy the fruits of my hard work. And most of you guys probably can empathize when, if you're a business owner, you know that's 70-hour weeks in some cases. And looking back, I'm just amazed that both of my boys, they love Jesus, they're good to their mom, they're good to me, they've married beautiful, godly women. I don't know how that happened because I wasn't around much. I was always working on the deal. So, so by 2010, basically to try to keep the company afloat, I had to exercise my options to sell out, and I had a year where I couldn't compete. And so I had a lot of time on my hands, and three things I love to do is fish, play guitar, and exercise, workout. And so I thought, well, this would be great. You know, I'm getting paid for a year, and, you know, I'll be all right, you know. And during this time, I had a friend of mine that I went to church with. His name was Jack, and Jack had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And it's not a good diagnosis, and his prognosis was not good at all. And so but Jack loved to worship, and I was on a worship team at a church that we attended. And one day, Jack's wife said, "Would you mind just on your way home from church stopping by the house, because Jack could no longer get out, and just spending a few minutes leading us as a family in worship?" I said, "Sure, I'd be happy to do that." And Jack would just light up, you know, and I knew what his old favorite hymns were, and I would play these hymns, and he would sing a little bit, or sometimes just listen. And but as Jack's disease continued to progress, he went into an inpatient facility, a hospice facility, and his wife invited me to visit him there. And I hadn't had any training as a therapeutic musician, but somehow I knew that less was more. And so I would come in and do these arrangements. I'll just give you a little hint of a little, just like "How Great Thou Art." This was Jack's favorite hymn. Play these old hymns, and Jack would fall asleep. And so after I'd been there a couple of visits, the nurse came in and said, "How do you do this?" I said, "Well, Jack's like a brother. He's a friend of mine." She goes, No. "I understand why you do this, but how do you do this?" She said, "We give him morphine and Ativan for his agitation, and it doesn't touch him. But you come in and you play for him, and he falls asleep, and he sleeps all afternoon and into the evening. How do you do that?" And I said, "I don't have a clue. And I literally didn't. I didn't have a clue. And if any of you are familiar, there's a Bible story in 1 Samuel where King Saul just gets enraged and he's out of control. And his men go and get David, the shepherd, and say, bring your harp or bring your lyre and play for the king. And when David would play, the king's rage would pass. And I used to read that story and think, okay, it's just one of those God stories. Never having the slightest inclination that, well, I do believe it was a miracle, but there's science behind it. There's a lot of science behind it. So do we have any guys in here that understand physics, principles of sound and physics? Somebody help me out here. Well, at any rate, so I'm going to segue into what we call live therapeutic music. And make a long story short, I started researching this live therapeutic music, found a program where I could get certified in doing it, and that took about a year and a half to complete. And when I was done with my training, I knew that this was what I was going to spend the rest of my life doing. And I realized that these hands that God had given me were meant to do this. And I was 55 years old, and that's how long it took for me to find my passion. And I didn't have a clue of how I was going to support our family. And God said, let me take care of that. You just focus on what I've called you to do. So when I shared with my wife, she said, well, you know, I've been home raising the boys for 20 years. I'll go back in the workplace and we're doing this. And I mean, I was like, we were living in John's Creek and we had a big house down there. And I said, you know what this means, don't you? She said, yep. She said, if we have to live in a double wide for you to do this, we're doing this. So we sold our lake property, we downsized, we moved up here just a couple of years ago. So I kind of did this segue that in 2013 is when I started working full-time, or trying to work full-time as a live therapeutic musician. Problem is, Medicare doesn't cover it, insurance doesn't cover it, and hospitals don't want to fund it if they can't get reimbursed. So we decided to start a nonprofit called Strings of Mercy, and I set about just basically telling the stories to the healthcare administrators and different foundations. We write grants, just got busy raising money. Not only for me to do this, but there are hundreds of music practitioners around the country that are certified but are not working because there's no money in the healthcare system for them. So currently I work one day a week at Northside Forsyth, and I'm in the ICU, oncology, progressive care. Basically, I'm all over the hospital. I work one day at Gwinnett Medical in Lawrenceville, the same areas, and then I work 2 days a week for a hospice provider, Agape Hospice. So whenever people see me in a healthcare setting, they go, oh, you here to serenade us? You here to entertain us? You here? And I'm just like, wow. You know, no, I've retired from performing long ago. And I generally don't have the time to talk about what therapeutic music is. So I just kind of smile. But really, this is where I'll get into the physics of sound. Einstein told us everything in creation has energy. And in everything that you can put your hands on there are atoms. And they have protons and electrons whirling around it. And they vibrate. Everything vibrates. And when you have movement and vibration, you have frequency. So even though our ears don't hear it, there's all kinds of frequencies. And this is not Shirley MacLaine New Age. I mean, this is physics. So our bodies, our central nervous system, are keen receptors of these frequencies. Anybody here with a medical background? Gosh, you guys are not helping me at all. Okay, so we have two parts to our nervous system, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. Now, Billy, if I were to pull out a baseball bat and come after you right now and I was teeing off and going to put a wall up on you, you'd kick into fight or flight. Yeah. So what would happen to your heart rate? What would happen to your blood pressure? And to facilitate all this sudden movement, respirations, everything runs up. Well, after you found that you could outrun me, and your brain says, okay, the danger's past, does your heart rate and heart and blood pressure and respiration stay at that elevated status for the rest of the day? No. The brain goes, whew, dodged that one. So the brain releases chemicals, dopamines and endorphins, to guess what? Bring all that back down. That's the parasympathetic nervous system. So in essence, live therapeutic music, what I'm trained to do is to go in and work with a patient one-on-one and trick their brain into releasing those chemicals. And typically what it does, it helps them manage pain. When you're at Northside Forsyth up there and you've been in an accident and they give you so much oxycodone for the pain, they just can't keep giving it to you. There's a cutoff. At some point there's a threshold that they're saying, you got to wait another hour or two or three. So what we've learned is that we can use sound. We call it music, really, but it's sound therapy to stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system to release endorphins. It helps manage pain. It helps lower blood pressure. It helps relax respirations. Respiratory distress. I work with a lot of patients with COPD. I work with a lot of patients. They get into hospitals and they develop this pneumonia, and you know, they're just, when you can't breathe, everything else starts going south quick. And but they can only give you so much medicine. So I'll get a call, can you go in and work with this patient? And the net result is, guys, that last year we did a little survey of the patients that we worked with at Gwinnett Medical. 52% of the patients that I worked with that were alert and awake, that were oriented and responsive, 52% of those patients fell asleep within 20 minutes. And when I'm in the ICU, I can watch the heart rate. I can watch the blood pressure. I'm ruined from doing anything else. When I see a physician in the ICU say, can you go spend some time and see if you can help that gentleman relax? I mean, God's given me a gift to do with this guitar something that medicine can't do. And it's just amazing. So I want to talk a little bit about the physics, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that, but there are three elements. Frequency. Like I said, everything vibrates. And so even our bodies vibrate. Have you all ever seen these, what they call sound tables, and they put sand on it and they turn up these various frequencies, and various frequencies make different designs on these tablets. And so you have this little covering of sand and you turn it on and it's these most beautiful symmetric shapes. Just Google sound tables. It's amazing. And as you adjust the frequency, the shapes change. We won't look at those, but so we have frequency. And so my job as a music practitioner is, John, I'm going to come in, and if I'm working with you, I want to know, are you going to respond to an A flat, or to a C sharp or to G, and I'm looking for that frequency. And I'm trained to recognize the subtle changes in the physiological response that patients exhibit. You know, when their hands relax, when their eyes start to flutter. I'm constantly watching for signs just to tell me when I'm dialed in. So I'm very much keyed in on frequency. There's another aspect called sympathetic resonance. And I'm wondering if you've all seen this video. You ever seen these? Let's see. Seen these? I don't know if you can see this, but I'm going to. Here we have a bunch of metronomes, and they're on a piece of polystyrene board. Whoops. Started it. When you start it in the beginning, they're not synchronized, are they? They're all moving independently of one another. But listen to the cadence. As you listen, you hear more and more of them begin to synchronize with one another. And as that continues over a couple of minutes, that's just through sympathetic resonance. And so, tempo has a lot to do with this. And so when I see a guy whose heart rate is, you know, 85 or 90, I may play halftime to that, but basically I'm going to synchronize with either his heart rate or his respiration rates, and I'll start playing music at the tempo where he's at. And as we synchronize through the vibrations, I slow the tempo of the music down, and guess what happens to the heart rate? It drops. It's the craziest thing. I mean, I'm ruined. I've had offers to go back and get back in the construction industry and live a very comfortable life, but I am flat out ruined. Because when I can see what I can do through this music that no one else can, and knowing the passion and I think how I'm uniquely created and wired to be able to sit at the bedside of a dementia patient who has just gone off the deep end and almost combative, but yet I'll play a piece of music from her formative years, and all of a sudden she starts singing to it. I had an encounter with a patient once. This lady hadn't spoken an intelligent word in 6 months. Her granddaughter was sitting next to me, and I was doing a session with the patient, and I just was doing a simple it wasn't Over the Rainbow. It was, old Frank Sinatra. So I start singing that to this lady, and she starts singing with me. And the granddaughter's going. And then the patient turns and looks to her granddaughter and says, "Oh, sweetheart, when did you get here?" And she hadn't said anything, hadn't recognized anyone in 6 months. I was in a hospice facility playing for a gentleman who had just retired from Emory. he and his wife were going to travel the world for 2 years. They had this itinerary mapped out. They literally had been saving for this for their entire lives. And 3 weeks after he had retired, she found him in the garage, and he had suffered a stroke. And they're just, it was massive. And there wasn't anything they could do, so he was in hospice care. So I came in, and I was working with him, and I worked with him for 15, 20 minutes. Nothing. And then this little voice inside said, try Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World. And he was an African-American gentleman, and so I asked the wife, who was sitting at the bedside, does he enjoy Louis Armstrong? And she goes, oh, yes, what's that song? And I said, What a Wonderful World. And she goes, yes, that's it, that's his favorite song. So I start playing it. And 90 seconds into it, all of a sudden his eyes begin to flutter, and he opens his eyes, and he goes, beautiful. And she's like, oh my gosh. She thought I healed him. Or she thought he had, you know, I don't know what she thought. She got so excited. I knew that his prognosis was not good. And so I said, look, I'm just going to let you have this time together. But they spent 3 minutes saying goodbye to one another. And he passed later that day. Guys, it's just, you know, I would say it's magic, but it's not. But it's just incredible. And so my passion is not only playing for these individuals, but working with healthcare administrators and healthcare professionals to raise the awareness of what live therapeutic music can do as a non-pharmacologic intervention. The Joint Commission, which is the federal government's oversight of healthcare, they're, you know, we're in the midst of this opioid crisis, and they're telling hospitals and doctors, you can't over-medicate. You got to cut down on the medications. Well, the hospitals are going, what are we going to do to keep these patients comfortable? Because now all the hospitals are being graded on patient satisfaction. And if those patient satisfaction scores don't measure up to the point that the federal government says they have to, then Medicare starts withholding money from the hospitals, up to 10% of their monthly draw. That's big dollars. So the hospitals are starting to get very attuned to this. But, I mean, they don't teach anything like this in med school. I have physicians come to me all the time asking me, hey, can you come speak to our interns? Because we don't know anything about this. So it seems like I'm on a lifelong quest to help educate. And there are other people out there besides me that are doing this work. But this is what I'm called to do. And so the way I wrap this all back around with the story I told in the beginning is passion. Look, some of us are a little older than others. Some of us are a little younger. But I just want to encourage you, all of us, man, every day is a gift, and we're here for a reason, and I don't know what your reason is for getting up every morning. I don't know if you're a consumer or someone that is looking to give back, but I just want to encourage everyone to find something that fills you to overflowing, and then give yourself away. Some of you are numbers guys. You know, you can look at a balance sheet and see things in a nanosecond. That's not me. So I'm never going to spend time, you know, counseling someone on how to get their P&L statements improved. This is my gift, but I'm sure every one of you have gifts. And I've been at the bedside of thousands of patients since 2000, well, really since 2010. And I've been at the bedside when patients take their last breath and cross over. And And more than anything, I'm convinced that life is a gift. We're given one day. And so when I woke up this morning, I'm saying, okay, God, what do you want to do today and how do I be part of it? And I don't know what your gifts are, but I'm sure there's something in each of your lives that make you want to get up and invest yourself into someone's life. And that's all I'm asking you to do is just consider pouring into someone to make this place a better world. So I'll spend a few minutes just questions.
Yeah. Any questions?
Dick. You sort of answered my question a minute ago as to whether or not you just do the sound or whether you sing too. Does it sort of just depend as to what?
Great observation. So we're trained to play for five patient conditions. Some patients are getting ready to be discharged. You know, so when a patient doesn't have symptoms of pain or other physiological issues where they're what we call acute or critical, then I can almost go in there and entertain them. So I can sing, but the sicker the patient, the less stimulation. When I'm playing for patients who are actively dying, it's not even using familiar music. It's and sometimes there's as much silence as there is sound. But if I sit here and started doing these kinds of, within 20 minutes, some of you are going to start doing that. It's just, like I said, I'm able to trick the brain to release those endorphins to take us to dreamland. And I'm not talking barbecue. Yeah, Ed?
Just a comment. I had an older brother that had, you mentioned COPD,
mm-hmm.
and he also had throat cancer
mm-hmm.
at the same time. You know, COPD actually took him finally. Lived up in Dahlonega. And when he's most agitated, according to his wife, and I was living in Texas at the time, I came over to visit him last year of his life, but of all the music, he had put on slack guitar, Hawaiian music, and they had a porch out by the river, and he'd sit mm-hmm. out there listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd say in half an hour, he's sleeping.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, he was held on wheels at times because he couldn't breathe. Mm-hmm. He struggled to breathe.
Yeah.
But he would, so the therapy works.
Yeah.
Nobody understood why, but he would.
And recorded music is better than no music. But once you record, I mean, I've got CDs of a lot of this music, but I don't encourage healthcare providers to play that for patients because once you record it, you can't change it. And so what I'm trained to do is that as the patient's condition changes, as if this were your brother and as he started to get a little sleepy, I would slow the tempo down. And basically, I'm drawing them into that delta sleep, that deep brain waves, delta waves, where they're in a deep sleep. And so it's a little dicey. Sometimes tempo, steady tempo in music can stimulate us, and that stimulation at the end of life can turn into agitation. But your brother found what worked, and that's a great example. Yes, Arthur?
How do you get your turn?
I went through training through a program called Music for Healing and Transition Program. And they it's a series of, you go to different cities and take, you know, full a three-day weekend of really in-depth training. And then there are webinars, and we have to read a ton and write a lot of research. And then, write a lot of papers. And then we do recordings for each of these five different patient conditions, and then they pick us apart and tell us, you know, where it's hard for former entertainers to embark on this because there's part of us that loves to get in there and just cut a good jam. But that training, the association that trains people doesn't do anything to help them find work. And so that's why I felt led to start Strings of Mercy, is not only to help fund my work, You know, taking a $150,000 cut in pay was a little scary the first year, but I got to tell you guys, learning to live like a sparrow, there's nothing like it. I mean, when things come up and I'd say, okay, God, I know you got, and I don't mean to be over religious, but there's just a joy that comes from living in the simplicity of, if you take care of the sparrow, you'll take care of me. And then watching as he does that, it's incredible.
Great. Thanks, Chuck. Let me have your...
I'll let you grab it.
Okay.
Oh, was it supposed to be on?
Oh, it's not on? Yeah, it's on.
Anyway, I do have some cards. And if you're interested in finding out more about our organization, stringsofmercy.org. And I should have brought some CDs, but I've got...
Awesome.
I got a couple with me.
Oh, here. Okay. There you go. Billy, thanks for coming. Thanks for coming. Okay, good. I will. Thank you.
Anyway, it's been great to get to meet you all, and I so enjoyed the conversations around the table and hearing about your all's passions. And I can tell from the group that are of the men that are here that you all are giving and pouring back into your community. So,
great job. Thanks, Chuck. Yeah, let's give him a hand. Thank you. And you know, one of the as I get older, and the way I find out I'm older is when I do self checkout at Walmart. Now they have monitors up there, and I look up there and I say, "Who's that old guy in the monitor?" But one of the things that came to me, I guess during a quiet time one time, or just in general, is it's never too late. You know, until the last breath escapes your mouth, it's never too late to do something that you have passion for. And I heard this thing too, that which you have passion for but causes fear when you think about it is what you go after. And I think that's kind of the story that Chuck has. Yeah.
It is not part of the American culture to walk away from a very comfortable lifestyle to do something as crazy as playing music for sick people.
And yet it's so rewarding.
I'm reaching out of other.
Amen. So thank you. Well, have a cup of coffee. We're going to meet again in 3 months. And appreciate you coming today.